Rivers, and before I forget, we are going to try to take some calls in the second hour. I'm not sure how it's going to work since we're moving ahead by a couple hours. I know that it's going to make a difference for a lot of folks, but if anybody wants to call in the second hour, the number will be, I will announce it, but also it is at the website. So anyway, my name is Kurt Kallenbach, and I am the people. And tonight, Ralph and I are probably going to have a pretty decent discussion, but let's get some stuff out of the way first. Let's see. I noticed lately in the, we'll call it the Patriot circles or the Patriot threads on the Internet, and both Ralph and I, I'm sure, get a lot of the same stuff, but a lot of folks have been sending out some of the videos, some footage from, I believe it was called Empire of the City. It's a very good, it's about a 5-hour video series, but it's about the crown, and it's about who the bankers are, who own the United States and all that, and it's a very good, well-spent, well-invested 5 hours if you got the time. I would actually tell everybody that they need to take the time, because that's one of those, it's one of those videos that is so informative that you can't even look away. It's that good. But anyway, it's been circulating all over the place. I get it back from multiple people every day now, so at least I know people are starting to watch it. The other thing I wanted to talk about up front, also that's circulating quite a bit now, is a lot of the stuff that's happening across America, within the United States, but across America, with the police. And there's so much going on out there. There's so many unlawful activities. There's so much. My wife, actually, and she doesn't watch much of this stuff, but my wife was watching one the other night. She probably got hooked into it through one of those brass checks or something like that. But it was a TV reporter. They were following either a dirty cop or something like that, and the cop called in to his station and had a bunch of cops, a bunch of other cops, start tailing this woman, this 5'2" woman, and they got her out of the car and had like 10 squads. Seriously, this is horribly ugly stuff, and this little woman is getting brutalized, and they keep the cameraman from filming, and of course none of the 20 squads have their dash cams on or anything like that. So, you know, I guess that's the point, is that what we're starting, and I mean just barely starting to experience right now with the cops, is the brown shirt Nazi situation that occurred in Germany. And only if these guys start to recognize who they've become or what they are, we may be in some trouble. But you know what? The United States is collapsing so quick that I'm not even sure that the police, I think most of those guys are, they don't have the guts anyway to stand and do what they're going to be told. So that's probably going to be a good thing. So they're going to be running for the hills just like everybody else. What other things do I want to get out of the way up front here? Here's something interesting. I forgot to talk about this the other week, but there's a new system in the Rockford Jail, house. Number one, I'm wondering if this is happening across, the United, or America as well. Has anybody else noticed that the county courthouses are changing their names from courthouse to, justice, centers? I mean, Rockford, actually, the courthouse is being changed. They've moved away from all that stuff, the court system, the courthouse, and now they have a justice center. I'm wondering if anybody grasps the weight of that, changing from a courthouse to a justice center. I know I've covered this ad nauseum, but the idea that there is no law, thus is it even a requirement to have court? No. What we have currently as of 1870 is a system of justice, and that's why the Department of Justice was created in 1870. For who? For the United States citizen. That's what it's for. There's no Article III judiciary, so all you patriots out there, you need to stop. But anyway, Rockford has this new multi-million dollar Justice Center. And when we were tossed in there a couple weeks back, here's what they do now. When they take your cash, when they take your Federal Reserve notes, I mean, I'm not talking about the change, I'm talking about the Federal Reserve notes, what they have you do is feed them into a machine, like a change machine, but it feeds it in there, and then it kicks out a receipt. So you're feeding in your ones and fives and tens and twenties or whatever, and in the end, you got a receipt. Well, when you do finally get out, they instead of giving you a check like they used to, they now give you this little plastic credit card or, you know, the debit card type thing. What's interesting about that debit card is that they have it set up. Well, most of you know that you know, not every place takes a debit card. Most of the places we tried to use it. In other words, we had two cards, one for my wife, one for me. One had like $87 on it, one had, or 86, and one had 77 or something like that. And we tried to use these cards in different places, and they wouldn't accept them. Now these cards, remember, I had some money on me, and Debbie had some money on her, and these two cards amounted to about $150, $160. And you can only take if you go to a cash machine, you know, they knock you for $2.50 on their card. Also, there's $1.50 a week service fee. So these people are stealing money from you every chance they get. Even when they hand you back your money, they're already stealing it from you. They're already holding on to it. They don't give you the cash back. They don't even give you a check anymore. They give you a card where there's a service fee, weekly service fee, and also there's a $2.50 transaction fee. Well, here's what happened to us. We went there to just take it all out. We went there to take it out, and you can only take it out in increments of 20. So the $80, $87 one, you know, we took $80 out, and it gave us the full 80. But it zeroed the account, so the other additional $7 was no longer available, so they stole that from us. The other thing is that the $76 one, we could only get $60 off because it was a $20 increment, and so they stole the $17 from us. What a scam! I can't even believe, you know, seriously, I cannot believe the system we're putting up with. These guys, this Department of Justice is stealing every chance they get. They're worse than any gang I can imagine, because at least you know you can defend yourself against a gang. You can actually hurt somebody, kill somebody, do whatever in the name of self-defense. But you know what this gang called the police and this Department of Justice, this system that they have in place? You can't do a damn thing. You can't stop them at any point. Even when you're trying to get your money back, they're stealing it from you, and you have no way to stop it from happening. These people are absolute pigs. And yet we're stuck with this, and we think this is acceptable. I mean, there are even people out there that think that there's still a common law in place. There's people out there that think that they still have rights. I can't even believe this. Anyway, so that was this credit card system. So we thought that was kind of funny. We're laughing now because we get it. We completely grasped it. Now here's another interesting thought. Today we ended up going to court today. And I know the hardcore patriots out there are not going to agree with this, but I don't even care anymore about the hardcore patriots because they don't know what is actually happening. They're the ones fighting for rights that they don't have. I'm done with that. It only took me 2 years to come full circle to realize that I don't want anything to do with this anymore. But anyway, so we hired the best attorney in Rockford. This guy doesn't lose anything. And the representation, I mean, they go to the front of the line. We don't ever have to speak. We don't have to deal with anything. All we have to do is hand over our energy called Federal Reserve Notes. We hand that over to them. They handle it, and we're out of there. Here's what happens today. My wife, she had, I don't know what it was called, some pre-trial thing or something, but this attractive, cute little girl that used to work for the prosecutor, is now working in this office that we hired. Best attorneys apparently in town. Maybe even in the Midwest. We don't have to wait at all. She gets called first, and basically Debbie's out the door. They're gonna get everything dropped that quick. All we had to do was pay them. Isn't that amazing how in their system, they take it one way or another. There were, before Debbie was called, there were probably, I don't know, 15 DUIs that went up before us. Real quick, though, I mean, I'm talking about a minute here, a minute here, a minute here, so there might have been 15 DUIs before Debbie, and it didn't take much more than 10 minutes tops. A DUI in the Rockford area is worth somewhere between $2,500 and $5,500. If you do the math on that, you can see what kind of a business this Department of Justice runs. This is an extremely profitable business. In fact, I started thinking about this. What if you owned a company and you sold widgets or whatever you want to call it, but you sold something, and in fact, you didn't have to sell anything. You could force it upon the people. You could actually go out to anybody and say, oh, you're going to buy five of these. You're going to buy five of these. Well, I don't want five of those. Well, you don't have an option. You're going to buy five of these, and here is what you're going to pay me. That is what the Department of Justice does. The police go out there and they force a bunch of tickets. They force a bunch of charges upon you. And then you have to pay them. If you don't pay them, you go to jail. Think about a sales force that all you had to do was go out and threaten people and you got what you wanted. You got their money. That is what the Department of Justice is. That's what the police department, that's their job. Their job is to threaten people at the point of a gun, hiding behind a badge, and then they sell you their protection. And as long as you do, as long as you complete the transaction, everything's okay. Now, that's that side. You can also choose, if you'd like, to pay, instead of buying what they have to sell, you could buy an attorney. Now, the attorney, if he's good, like ours, if you buy the attorney on the other side, you'll still have to pay the money. But you won't have to deal with that system. You won't have any record. Now, don't get me wrong. I know that none of this has to do with real human beings or real people of flesh and blood. It has to do with persons that are created under the 14th Amendment. I already know all that. But my point is that we don't have to speak. We don't have to look at anybody. All they go up and they represent their character, their person, their fictional creation. And all we have to do is give some amount of energy to the attorney. And we walk out of there. Now, why in the world, if anybody had any brains, would they want to go in there and try to defend a system that's 100% stacked against them, waste all their time, even to educate themselves could take years? And you know what? There's still no guarantee of outcome. See, in our situation, there's a guaranteed outcome. It's already a done deal. All the money that they stole from us in bond, you know, some of that we might get back, but, you know, there was other charges against us in the past, so they're going to try to apply that. I know that's what the system is. That's why they picked us up to begin with. They picked us up because they wanted us to pay one way or another. So they're going to, you know, they put a bunch of erroneous charges against us. They had us pay a huge amount of bail to get out. And then what? They're going to just keep that money for things from the past. Well, that's the way it works. Whatever. I'm through with this lie. I'll just play the game the way it's intended until the damn thing collapses, which is coming. So, do I really care about any of this stuff anymore? No. I don't care because not enough other people care. People just want to go about their business and not worry about what's actually happening around them. Okay, so let's see. That's out of the way. It's just funny because when you sit there and when you're waiting, we don't go into the court room unless we absolutely have to. But we're looking around, and we were sitting there kind of laughing because we were looking at the attorneys coming and going, and they're all laughing and jovial and high fives and shaking hands and smiling and having a good time. And, you know, as they come and go out of the courtroom or rooms, but all the people sitting outside in the chairs waiting to go in are all the sad sacks, you know, the dregs of life. They're sitting around waiting. You got the people that cause the problems and reap the benefits. That's the Department of Justice side. Then you have the people being punished for accepting a system that is being forced upon them or thrust upon them. You have the slaves, the U.S. citizens, and then you have the people. And that's the way it works. So I just wanted to get that out of the way because we were in you know, court, and it was funny. It's funny, too, to watch you know, you do go in there, and I'm sorry, all you other folks that don't believe in this gold fringe stuff, and it's true. You know, they have a giant American so-called flag sitting outside the building, but you go in the building, and there's nothing but gold fringe. Well, come on, guys, wake up. It is what it is. It's not like a lot of attorneys have told me in the past. It's just a prettier flag, or it's just the pompous nature of some of the judges. Come on, guys. It is what it is. We're under a military dictatorship. Those courtrooms are not Article III judiciaries. They're private military tribunals. And then once you're in there, they capture you with the military aspect, with the admiralty law, and then they prosecute you through commercial law, and that's the way it works. Done. Okay, I'm done with this stuff for the night. Here's another thing I want to get out of the way, because Debbie and I have also decided that we're moving. Now, I'm not going to tell anybody where we're moving, but it's funny because Debbie and I basically deal in cash, and we deal in cash because we don't really want to deal with the whole commercial credit system. We deal with that as little as possible, and anybody that deals with us, you know, we really do want to stay away from any of that garbage. Well, we also decided not to buy anything. Because why? Because you can't. You can't. Yeah, there's no way to own anything in America. That was given away a long time ago. That opportunity is long gone. So we decided to find a nice house in a remote area and rent it. So here's the trouble. Imagine coming up to the landlord, or whatever you want to call them, the owner of the property, or whatever, and they hand you this rental agreement, or they fax it, or they email this giant rental application. Now, here's the thing, and I want to cover this, at least I want to try to get through this first half hour, because I prefer to have a conversation with Ralph, actually, but I want to go over this rental application real quick, because it's very interesting to me. So here we are looking at these houses, and they're good-sized homes. I mean, we're not talking about, you know, 1,500, 1,800, or 2,000 square feet. I mean, we're looking at 4,000 or 5,000 plus 1,000 square feet homes. They're good-sized homes. But so I expect these people to want to get a decent renter in there. But this rental application, now, I know that, again, I'm speaking to the choir, but this rental application is interesting because, first of all, for those of you that have a Black's Law and actually are starting to grasp the idea that there's an entirely separate language out there, a legal language, legalese, the word application is already a hook. So to fill out any application is to put yourself within the United States right off the bat. So the word rental application at the top caught my eye. It says each applicant and co-applicant. So the word applicant is all over the place. It goes down to your applicant's name, things like that, date of birth. We all know that what that means. It's specific in this world, in this language. A date of birth is specifically applying to those that have a birth date and that actually know it. I don't believe anybody knows their birth date. In fact, if you think you do, you need to rethink that concept, because there's nobody out there that actually knows their birth date other than what somebody told them, which makes it hearsay. So don't claim to know anything that you can't possibly know. On the date of your birth, the moment you came out of the womb, you didn't have the legal capacity to even understand any situations that are going on around you, so therefore, any information after that was hearsay. Remember that. The same goes with your name. Hearsay. So, again, date of birth, that's at the rental application. This is in the very first paragraph, Social Security number. That's in there. Fifth paragraph down, it's name of other persons to occupy the apartment. It's actually a home or a house, but name of other persons to occupy. So you got occupants and persons. You have current landlord's information, previous landlord's information. Then it goes down to current employer. Well, there's two things. It says current employer information. First of all, the word information. People need to know what that means. And employer, obviously we know what the word employer means. Because we know how, those of us that have really looked into this know how an employer connects you to the United States or keeps you within the United States. goes on to ask how many vehicles to be parked on the property. Vehicles. You know, not what car are you driving, but it says vehicles. So, I mean, the very first page, I had highlighted about seven different legal terms that I had no interest in. It goes on to talk about resident qualification criteria. Well, you know what? There's another word that I will never claim. That's resident. And then it's, this is actually an seven-page application. Rental disclosure form goes on to talk about code violations and conditions affecting the habitability of the unit. There are so many things about this. It talks about the landlord's rights. In fact, it goes on to say the security deposit were applicable. It goes on to itemize what it would cost, you know, for cleaning the stove, for cleaning the kitchen cabinets, the bathtub, and things like that, and he's going down it. I looked at this and said, I love this house. And we did. It's the neatest house we've seen in a long time. But just, we really wanted to get in there, and I thought, no, I'm not even going to fill that thing out. And I felt bad because I looked at this, and I looked at Debbie, and I said, I can't. I can't fill that out. And so she says, what are you going to do? I said, I'm going to write my own offer, and I'm going to do it from a man's standpoint, not from a person, not from a legal entity, but from a man to a man. And so I did. Now, most people would go, well, what's the likelihood you're going to have something go through with that? Well, here's the thing. It's just that I wrote. I'm not going to give any names or locations, but it says, Dear Mr. So-and-so, attached you will find my offer to rent the blank property. My wife and I met you this past Thursday at your unique property in blank, Wisconsin. My wife really loved the place, and I think it's very interesting to say the least. We were the couple who work out of their home in Illinois. My wife has a large online business, and I'm a professional researcher speaker. Since I thought I should let you know why I've sent you an offer rather than return the standard rental application you emailed. Neither my wife nor I are United States citizens. We expatriated a little over a year ago. We no longer use or recognize the Social Security system or its numbers. We live and deal in cash only and have walked away from the national credit system. I, in fact, only receive silver in payment of my services. We will be more than happy to provide the needed financials and any professional references if you are interested in our offer. Please feel free to call me anytime at. Looking very forward to hearing from you. And then in parentheses I wrote, my wife really liked the place. And I signed it basically and without prejudice. Well, here's the thing: is I put I call it an offer for private rental agreement. I'm not going to read the offer because if anybody's interested, I'd be more than happy to show it to them. But I'm not going to read it over the air. Here's the thing: is we didn't know. We looked at two or three other homes, and they were very interesting. But this thing was so cool. I mean, this is a house actually on stilts. It's on steel I-beams. But anyway, I'm going to close this thing out pretty quick. But today, we got an email back. I sent this. I forwarded this. I put this letter together for him. And, you know, we just let the chips fall as they may. Well, today we got an email back from him, and he's going to call me tomorrow. Now, this is in lieu. I mean, think about all the other folks going through the traditional path, you know, filling out all this stuff, jumping through all these legal term hoops, and I'm not going to do it anymore. You know, this is between him and I, and if he wants to stay out of it, when I wrote the contract, there are no legal terms in this contract, as it's written. It's also a private rental agreement. So I used all the words and stuff outside of their situation. I also said that his property was on the soil of the 13th sovereign Union state, Wisconsin. I stayed out of that whole legal system, and he got back to us. So you know, keep your fingers crossed. I think that we got a pretty interesting thing going on up there, but it's exciting. And I think if people take the time and start to figure out how do they really want to be participating in this garbage system the United States has set up, or you want to figure it out for yourself. So on that note, I got all my garbage out of the way. I think we did it in having a pretty good time, and it's probably, it looks like it's about 25 after 6. Yeah, let's take a break. Ralph, you there?
I am indeed.
Get us out of here, and let's come back and have a conversation.
We'll do it. Here we go.
And daughter carried on with
again. Got a lot of stuff out in that first half hour. You know, it's funny because in the break, we always have a lot of fun and a lot of good conversation. Again, the second hour, we're going to do a call-in. Hopefully there's some folks out there that want to that have something to say. But so anyway, about I just want to tie up a couple things real quick. The offer for private rental agreement, whether he takes it or not, I think that number one, he saw something in that agreement that was by far better than relying on some cookie cutter agreement that, you know, you go and buy at Office Depot or something that uses all the legal terms to bind people and things like that. It's got to be refreshing to people. And I think this guy, you know, he has multiple properties. But I think it's got to be refreshing for people to see somebody that, A, takes the time to learn something, B, is actually thinking for himself and not relying upon the credit bureau or things like that. I know that that's important to people, but, you know, this man told us, and he's had the property for 8 years, some really good people, some really bad people. What does that mean? If he's jumping, using the same hoops for people to jump through, what's the likelihood that you're going to have some good people, some bad people? Well, it's pretty good. And, you know, I think I'd rather rely on my ability to judge the character, the feelings I have about somebody, rather than look at some numbers on a piece of paper and say, oh, here's their credit score, here's this, here's that. Some of the nastiest, ugliest people I know have giant, perfect credit scores, and they would stab you in the back quicker than anybody I know. So as far as I'm concerned, integrity has nothing to do with most of that stuff. It has to do with who's the best at hiding the truth. And that's really what we're all about here at this point. I'd rather, in fact, this piece of paper, this agreement, this private agreement between him and I'd rather have it just be a handshake. I'll be honest with you. I'd rather have it just be a handshake because I'm here, you know, the last paragraph, I mean, he was saying that, you know, there's all kinds of verbiage in the leasor's right to enter the unit. I mean, at any time, just given 12 hours notice or this or that. And I'm going, no, if I rent, it's on 5 acres, if I actually take the buildings and that land for a year, 2 years, 5 years, it doesn't matter, it's mine. While I'm on it, if I'm paying for it, it's my place. I'm not going to have people coming and going deciding when, you know, when there's an emergency or anything like that. No, it's mine. And that's the difference, I think, between looking at somebody and bowing down to them, including the United States, but it's the difference between, hey, you know what, this is my life. If you're going to take my money, then I get something in return for it, like privacy. Anyway, I think I should bring Ralph in here. We haven't had a conversation for a while this week. Ralph, you out there?
Yes, indeed.
Are you doing the dishes?
No. I have, however, recovered from the first half hour. I have picked myself up off the floor, and now am a sane part of the conversation. I will try to refrain and restrain myself as appropriate.
if for those of you that don't go into a courthouse very often, it is interesting. And you know, Debbie and I have decided that we're just going to let things get handled with their currency. And it is funny to now sit there and watch exactly how things work because I'm not interested in going in there pretending I have rights. I'm not interested in going in there pretending, you know, that the judge. I don't want to look at a man look at me and lie to me. You know, I don't want that. I'd rather not look at him at all. I'd rather just look at, you know, the attorney and let him speak or represent. Anyway,
you know, Kurt, I'll tell you what was most interesting about that. You know, when you talked about the 10 or so DUIs that preceded you and that court basically raked in $25,000 in a few minutes, they come to your wife's case and they'll handle it and it'll get dismissed and it'll get thrown out and that'll be that. and they collected whatever tithe they've collected, and that's it. I mean, you couldn't ask for a more efficient revenue collection system if you had actually sat down and planned it, which of course is a joke because that's precisely what they did all the way down to the little cash acceptor in the jail. But frankly, I think that, and I told you this off air, I said I would have made a point of saying to the attorney, look, in the fees that we're going to pay you to take care of this, you should know that we already have, whatever cash you couldn't get out of that, change thing because it would only accept 20s. And so we have a credit with your system. So, we need to have that credit applied because it is all the same. And I have a couple of local attorneys here that I talk to that have basically kind of mirrored what you have, been telling us here tonight, that basically it is, and I've said this for ages, it's not a justice system, it's a legal system. And what's happening now is that states, municipalities, and counties are so desperate for revenue. I mean, my cop on the beat who sits out there and does the, does the little radar scam on my street every morning, he and I know each other well because he's never caught me speeding. He knows that I do, but he's never caught me because I can always see him long before he gets to me, until I get to him. So I'll stop and pull over and have the conversation with him. And we've known each other by, going back a ways when I used to work in one of the buildings here late at night, and first time he accosted me and we kind of got to know each other. And he said to me, he says, we can't officially say it. He says, but I am really under pressure to, produce quality ticket revenue. And he said it in that short and that succinct a basis. And this, folks, looks to me like precisely what you would expect to see when the states are broke, the counties are broke, and the municipalities are broke. They are desperate for revenue. And I don't mean to make light of, the lawbreakers. I don't want a DUI on the road any more than the next guy. But still, the way that entire process works is definitely more interested in revenue than it is in my safety out on the highway.
Well, and again, and I know I can tell every time I say this, but driving drunk is not a crime. As horrible as that sounds, that is not a crime unless there's an injury. And that's what where true crime comes in. And what they've done is they've sold us this bill of goods. I mean, seriously, if somebody is drunk and they get home and their head hits the pillow, no crime was committed. But under their statutory actions, they could still actually probably at this point in history knock down the front door, come up and give the guy whose head is on the pillow a breathalyzer, say, you drove back here drunk tonight. We didn't see you. Nobody saw you. No cameras caught you, but we know you were here and now you're here. And that's the way this works now is no crimes are being committed anywhere, and yet they bring in billions and billions of dollars from their threats, their incarcerations, their private system.
See,
that's what's scary.
See, now the devil's advocate will say to you, and I don't disagree with you. You're right. There is no crime committed until there is an injury, but.
Yeah.
The thing is that we have progressed in this country to such a nanny state level that we're trying to protect ourselves from ourselves. And what people don't realize, and sometimes we go back to the famous quote that those who would trade liberties for security will get neither. The truth of the matter is, you're trading away your liberties for the supposed safety that you're going to reduce your chances of getting hit by a drunk driver. Don't get me wrong. I don't want drunks on the road any more than the next guy. And I'll be darned if when I see one come across the lane and dive at me, which I have seen a few times. I just happen to have faster reflexes than most from years of racing cars. But, the reality of it is that, You know, you look at that situation and you go, you know, where are we preempting behavior in an effort to try and save something? You know, here's the question I ask. For all of those people who are arrested and put through a system for what ultimately is a victimless thing at that point because it hasn't happened, what I want to know is how many people are arrested and put through a system for something that ultimately would hurt no one. I'm not necessarily talking about drunk drivers here, but, you know, you can go through this whole process. We're so compelled in this country to protect ourselves from the slightest of danger. And what has been the result? You're in more danger from lack of your liberties than you ever realized. And this has been a slippery slope we've been down for, you know, literally 100 years, and most people don't even realize it. They just don't understand it. It never clicks.
Well, that, I guess the whole thing is that it's scary and horrifying and as ugly as, and there's so many people that are killed by drunk drivers, but it's still not a crime to drive drunk. And again, the preemptive actions, who's making the money at it? Again, those 10 or 12 people that got through there in less than 10 minutes that made $25,000 for both sides, perhaps. I can't agree to any of that stuff. There's so many people in federal prisons, penitentiaries right now that are not supposed to be in jail. This system is so horrifying to me. The fact that they could follow Debbie and I home from a restaurant, break her window, and drag her out of a car for no apparent reason. I mean, that's where we're at. And again, early in the show, I started talking about all these different YouTubes and these that are showing these cops do this stuff. The cops are being told that they can do it. They're being even told that I am, you know, you do what I tell you to do, period. Well, that's not supposed to be the way it is. They're supposed to be protecting us. They're not supposed to be threatening us. And that's where we're at. But the system, and again, Ralph, you and I speak about this all the time, this thing is collapsing so fast. I can't even wait for the truth to actually be exposed far enough along to where there are breadlines, where there is no water or food for people, because you know what? That's what we deserve as a society at this point. If 51% of the people are either working for the man, the hand, call it what you want, if 51% of the people are actually involved with the United States, or they're getting handouts from the United States, what do we got? I don't want anything to do with this crap. I don't want anything to do with it. And man, I tell you what, I got so many emails about just leave the country.
And go where?
Are you kidding me?
And go where? This is a worldwide problem. People who say leave the country need to think. You know, I understand, you know, because I hear this argument constantly, and I get it a lot myself sometimes. Well, if you don't like this country, leave. No. I like my country. I love my country. I love the land that I'm on. And this goes back to the question I asked the other day, and that is, you know, what exactly do I pledge allegiance to? What is my loyalty? My loyalty is to a belief and a custom that this country, that living in this country used to provide, and what I'm opposed to are the people who usurped that freedom and that liberty on our land. And you dare tell me, leave my country because I have an objection to what these people on my country are doing to my country? Hell no, I'm not leaving this country. I'm going to fight these tyrannists on our land at my doorstep if I have to, by God, because they have stolen something from me. So you people who sit there and make the comment, well, if you don't like it here, leave. You need to think. If I leave, then the terrorists win. They stole my land from under me to the point where I couldn't live on it anymore. And if you support that, then why even bother saying anything about all the Mexicans streaming across the border? What you're saying is, if you say I should leave the country because I have a problem with what's going on here, then you have no defense whatsoever when your rights and your freedoms are impinged. You have not a leg to stand on. You don't like it here, leave. Think, people, think. The obvious question first is, where do you go? This is a global tyranny. Where are you going to go? But the second part of it is, the best chance we have to regain liberties and freedoms in this entire world is on this soil. And I have a passion for what this country stood for, what it used to be, and yes, I will fight for it. You're going to chase me off my land because I take exception to what some people on it are doing? No way. I'm done now.
Fantastic. Here, I'm going to read, and I've been trying to get into the habit of doing this, reading my invitation, because then people know why I get some of the responses I do. And I want to read a couple responses tonight before this next break. So, dear friends and enemies, so here we go again. The private United States murder machine, a.k.a. the U.S. military, has been sent in to destroy another sovereign nation and set up a central bank to steal everything from the people. Again, WTF. When will the people of the world wake up and put an end to these monsters? When will the American people realize the horrendous crimes they are party to as United States citizens? When will enough be enough? When will the truth once again be recognized? When will we stop believing their lies? I cannot believe anybody thinks this is a good thing. Again, I am sickened and ashamed of this repugnant place called the United States. What truly makes me sad is that so many people think it is acceptable to murder and destroy another country and its people because a bunch of pigs in D.C. said it was necessary. Step one, folks, remove head from, well, you know where. Here's some of the responses I got on that, and I wish, anyway, let's just go a couple, there's only a couple of drawings here. It says, but Kurt, there are some problems with your message. You make it sound as if it's the U.S. that is making them create a central bank. How can that be when we see that countries that don't have anything to do with the U.S. or are even enemies of the U.S. still have central banks, and they've done it all on their own. If you can't account for that, then your argument is invalid. Well, first of all, no. The central bank, when I speak of the IMF or anything else, it's the same people worldwide, folks.
You got it.
I mean, the U.S. Yeah, go ahead.
The premise that your emailer proceeds from is false, and that is he's saying that this is the U.S. doing. What you have to understand is that there are globalists that are using the U.S. as their enforcers. To the globalists, to the people in charge who want to take over the world and you want to get into an argument with me about whether that's really true or not, we'll save that for another conversation. For the purposes of this conversation, it is. The thing to understand is that the people who want Libya to be taken down, who want to topple Muammar Gaddafi, okay? These people use the United States through the little puppet there, the teleprompter reader, to enable the military to be, the U.S. military is the globalist's enforcer. This isn't about, this isn't about the U.S.'s desires or demands. It is about our being used. Our country being used, our treasure, our assets, our military, our money, to further these people's agenda. This isn't about the central bank. They created a central bank in Libya a week after, well, 2 weeks after this thing started. Now, who did that? It wasn't the U.S. who did that. It happened in paper only, but this was the first thing that the globalists did. Why? Because they wanted a repository so that when they plundered all the stuff that Gaddafi had, his 143 tons of gold, his oil revenues, and his revenues from the aquifers underground, they'd have a place to put it. A central bank where they controlled it. See, they don't control the money in Libya. They don't control the economy and the finances in Libya. So they had to create a central bank so they could go plunder it and steal its treasure and put it into their central bank where they control it. And that's why we're there. And we in America are called upon to do these evilists' bidding. And while we don't like it, we don't really understand how we're being played and how we're being used. How Congress is willing to sit by and let this happen. And, oh, they put on the drama of being in angst about it. Oh, well, Obama didn't consult with us. You know, Congress, here's the problem, folks. Congress has no authority. They have no power. Never mind that they've been bought off and they want to go along with the plan or else. The bottom line is, even if there were statesmen in Congress who stood up and said, no, enough is enough, they could do nothing. That's what people don't understand in this country. Congress has been co-opted. The administration has been co-opted. Wall Street is co-opted. So far, the corruption is so innate, so deep, and so entrenched. There is no access for you and me, the people, to grab hold of something legal, read justice-oriented, to begin to straighten it out. Congress isn't going to do it. Look at what's going on with the debt right now. We're about to implode in this country in manners you have no idea. And Congress can't even figure out what to do with the debt. They can't even stop spending. They took a claim to do $100 billion and reduced it to $38 billion in cuts. And when you really looked at it, and the Congressional Budget Office took a look at it, they said it would save $382 million this year. Hey, folks, that is two orders of magnitude, 1/100th of what they said and what they claimed and what they stood up on the podiums and announced so proudly they had accomplished after they passed that budget resolution extension. I wonder how many of them even knew how much they had been played. I wonder how many of those in Congress even understand the magnitude of what they're about to preside over. That's why we're in so much trouble, folks.
Sadly, though, Ralph, if it were you or I, we would actually be thinking about what it is we're trying to accomplish there. They're not thinking at all. It's about saving their own butts, figuring out how they're going to profit from their current situation or position. It's a whole different ball game. So, and let me do. We're going to be taking a break here real quick. Let me do one more thing. I want to. This is kind of, it dovetails into what you were just talking about as far as, you know, the American people or whatever. Here's one that says, should we assassinate Gaddafi? Or let them all just go psycho and murder the hell out of each other?
God, I loved that. I loved reading that article. I saw that and I just kind of swooned when I read it. I mean, it was just so on point.
Oh, you mean the hyperlink there?
There were a couple of places where the original story broke, but yeah.
Oh yeah, because in my email I have a hyperlink to where it says sovereign nation, because it doesn't matter what we think about these dictatorships. I mean, the guys that don't realize America is a dictatorship, a fascist dictatorship, and they believe all the lies. That's my point. So anyway, it says, to include killing the kids, I say tomahawk Gaddafi. There's a guy here. This is a guy that has no idea what's going on. Absolutely none. He's actually buying into the stories that are coming out of the mainstream media. He's buying into the fact that we The central bankers, the ones that are actually destroying the entire planet, are already in there. They have their money-grubbing hands in there already around the necks of the people by establishing this central bank over there.
They were saved already.
And you're saving these people? No, you're guaranteeing a life of misery like we have here in America.
They were saved. They were saved already in their little enclave called Libya. And they had a tin pot dictator who no one would argue is maybe a half bubble short of plum, but you know what? He gave to his people a lot more than any other government, if you will, in the world. And that's why we had to go after him. And that's why we propagandized and tyrannized the guy and tore him down and marginalized him for 40 years. Because he was opposed to Al-Qaeda. Because he was opposed to radical jihad. He was a secularist, for crying out loud. He was one of our best defenses against that kind of stuff. Although you can make the argument that a whole bunch of people in northeast Libya, you know, that was a key train, you know, breeding ground, if you will, for, you know, these Muslims who were willing to die for their cause. But the point is, I had some letters from some people who actually said that, you know, he actually was kind of liked in his country. You can go down the whole, you can go down a whole laundry list of the things that, you know, Libya was in pretty decent shape about. And we're saving them from that? For what? Look what Greece is about to go. They're going to go through a revolution because they were bankrupted by the banks. You know, the economic hitmen are going to Libya. Well, they've been there for 2 years. Just like Greece. Just like Central America back in the 80s. This is what we do, people. This is what the United States does on behalf of the globalists. We've got to get out on break. You're listening to I Am the People with Kurt Kallenbach, and it is, I have to come back and do the date today, it is Tuesday, April 26th, 2011. Stay with us, we'll be back for the second hour.
He never was a hero, but he
I know that things are different than they were in Daddy's day, but I still believe what makes a man really has a chance. You've got to stand for something, or you'll fall for anything. You've got to be your own man, not for me wrong.
Folks who'd like to call in, we're on a conference system, so to get to us, you dial 305-848-8888. You'll be entered into a conference. You press 1 to enter a conference, and then the conference number is 480-463-1243, follow it by the pound sign. It'll come back and confirm that number, and then press 1 to enter the call. And you'll hear a double series of beeps, and please remain quiet in the conference. We'll know you're there, and we'll get to you. Also, if you're listening to this show and, on the Internet, on your computer in the background, please turn it down. There is a time delay between the time we broadcast the show here in the studio and you actually hear it out in that end. And trust me that if you try and listen to them both at the same time, you will be cognitively challenged. So turn your volumes down. I also, a program note for people, we are doing this show 2 hours early tonight. And for those of you just joining us, and for those who may join later, we will rebroadcast this show at its regular time for people who did not get the message that we were doing this show 2 hours early today. So you'll be treated to a double dose of this show, whether you like it or not. But the bottom line is that for people who didn't get in on the message that the show was early tonight, we will repeat it at its regularly scheduled time. Kurt, back to you.
I like the way you added, you know, whether you,
whether you like it or not.
Hey, listen, before we get anybody to call in here, hopefully that people do call. It's always fun to listen to these guys. But today, my wife and I met up with a buddy of mine who works in the, I'll call it in the financial collection side of the world. And this is a guy that he's made some pretty good coin over the years doing what he does. He's very, very good at it. Well, today we went out, we took him out to lunch, and you know, I'm thinking, wow, with things going this bad, he's got to be just booming. And he looked at me and he says, Kurt, you know, nobody wants to pay. So even the guys that he's collecting for don't want to pay him. it's interesting to see his learning curve, too, because I've only known him for about a year. And since we started hanging around, you know, it's a pretty tough thing to believe. You know, about 50% of what I say is it's pretty out there. But now he's looking at me and he's going, I see what you're talking about. I said, dude, so what do you think about the economy? Where are we going? He says, this thing is going down completely. I said, so you're starting to get it. He says, you know what? I am. You know, he said he sold his silver early on. I mean, at about 35, but he said, I started buying provisions. I said, well, then you didn't lose anything. In fact, you gained everything because, you know, he was buying silver at $6 or $7. So at 35, he did quite well. And he had a lot of it. And so, like he said, he bought provisions. And I said, no, that's a smart investment. So anyway.
Yes, indeed.
Do we have somebody on here?
We have a caller. Caller, what's your name and where are you calling from?
Cynthia in Maryland.
Hi, Cynthia. Welcome to the show.
Hello.
Hey, Cynthia. What's going on?
Well, don't think I can give any details at this point, but just wanted to give some good news for a change in that Jack Bauer, a.k.a. Jack Bauer, has actually won his lawsuit, and it's a pretty good total sum payout. And
you mean out in California? Out in California.
Yeah. In my own case, let's just say I don't have to worry anymore, and I am going to be pursuing my own litigation for abuse.
Good.
Folks, can we, for the benefit of the listeners who don't know about the Jack Bauer situation, bring people up to speed? Just give them the executive summary of this, Cynthia or Kurt?
I'd say Kurt would be the best one, not me.
Well, actually, here's the thing about that is I haven't read up on it at all since I barely heard some of it. Jack is a radio host out in California, and he always is speaking his mind.
Yeah.
And it's really interesting. This is a guy that talks rough about the cops out there. Apparently, the California cops are really pretty ugly. But what exactly was his case? I mean, I know you don't want to go into too much detail, but what exactly was he in court for?
I don't know the details. I just know when we spoke just maybe 5 minutes this evening before this call, he said that he was taken into jail, and he did litigate about 2 years after the situation. So this happened 2 years ago that he was incarcerated, and he was pursuing litigation after the fact for the abuse, and I would presume, since his own focus is travel and traffic cops, that it has to do the right to travel without a license. But that's only my assumption.
I remember that now. Absolutely. In your case, again, you probably don't want to go into too much detail, but I know that you got yanked out of the house.
Well, basically, in summary, about a year ago, I got stopped as a side rider, not, you know, commercial passenger, with my husband using his father-in-law's truck on a cross-state trip that was non-commercial. My husband, being the polite one that he was, decided to slow down when a cop was driving fast and passing us. And because he made the mistake of being cautious and slowing down, seeing a cop coming up on the rear really fast, the cop opted to be, and I will be quite blunt in my own language, an asshole, and pull us over, citing that it was being a danger or a hazard of slowing down in traffic. Now, of course, that is totally ridiculous, and I had I hadn't turned in my license at that point. I had mailed it in, but I had not physically turned it in. And I told them, honestly, I don't have a driver's license. And, of course, they, through coercion and threat, require the birth certificate name. So I gave it to him under threat and coercion. In fact, I didn't give him any ID. And, of course, on the ticket, he had marked that I had shown ID, which was a blatant lie, because I had no ID on me. And then after the fact, I didn't do anything with it. I was so mad, and knowing what I know now, figured the whole thing was a fraud and corruption. I wasn't going to do anything with it, which was honestly a mistake on my part. I should have followed up with the police, but I only followed up with the Motor Vehicle Administration and did get it removed from the MVA, but not the police system. So a year after the fact, I get stopped by another cop in a local area using my mother-in-law's car. And I was no more than 10 minutes from home, and they had marked in the police system that I was, that my so-called license was suspended, and my mistake again was having no documentation whatsoever on me, even the fact that I had physically returned the license and had the so-called receipt, but I had it at home. And that's where I got those additional 3 ticket complaints for so-called driving under suspended. And needless to say, I did send letters and motions, and they basically got entirely ignored. And I'm not going to go into the full details. I can give you the website for a summary where I kept my journal. Is livingbeing.wordpress.com is where I kept the journal of everything.
Okay. Say that again.
Livingbeing.
Okay.
.wordpress.com. And
now,
I have documents as well there.
Cynthia and I actually met about a year ago, actually, via the phone. I called her up because I liked a lot of the information she was putting out there. And it was funny because I was on, I think I was actually on Jack Bauer's show,
mm-hmm.
or he called me directly, and he did a 3-way phone conversation, and Cynthia got on, and I kind of laughed. I said, my God, I mean, here's a guy in California, here I am in Illinois, and here's Cynthia out in Maryland, and he's calling us not knowing that we've already spoke. So, I mean, the community is not as big as people think it is, for those that are out there trying to figure this stuff out, but it is pretty funny to keep running across different people, you know, all over America that are waking up. Cynthia's been into this a lot longer than I have, that's for sure. But it's funny, too, Cynthia, that you use the word passenger when obviously you know that and traffic, all this stuff, all these statutory terms, I personally don't care about them anymore because... You know, I've been telling
you. You can't win.
No, not like that. You can't, though. So, well, and again, here's something very simple. If the American people rose up and said, we will no longer tolerate your private legal language system, all the problems disappear because there's no, the private justice system established 1870 would disappear overnight because everything they have, all their statutes are based on specific statutory legal terms. If we threw out that dictionary, if we threw out that language, we'd go back to a law system. People don't realize
it. It's top down.
It's what?
It's top down. The only reason that they are using it is because they're brainwashed and they don't know any better, or it's fear or it's greed, one or the other.
No. It is as simple as getting rid of the language, though, because think about it. You know, everybody realizes that the word drive is a commercial endeavor.
Yep.
Vehicle is a commercial situation. Passengers are considered commercial. Traffic is commercial. Everything they're talking about is commercial, and so are the statutes. And so is their system, their private legal system is commercial. So, unfortunately, people will never get it. It's not going to change until the whole thing collapses, which is pretty good for me. It's coming. It's not too far off. But, so, anything else new?
Well,
you're not in jail.
Yeah, that's the good news. And they did close the case as there's an update that gives the so-called legal term on it, but... I don't have to worry about that. Now I'm dealing with a private loan company that the staff are harassing me and refusing to give documentation on the account or anything, so I'm writing their board of directors, which I found information on the internet, asking the board of directors to get their staff to be a little bit more polite and provide me documentation on the account. And if the board members refuse to give documentation on the account, the next step, regardless, is litigating for the phone harassment.
Let me ask you something for those people that maybe haven't listened to the show before or something. And this is actually somewhat personal, but do you find that a lot of what you're doing, does it seem almost like you're, no matter how well you do, you're still losing? You're falling behind?
Well, I already know what it's all about. That's
right.
Why I am not in any form of really, as they say, suicidal condition, because I know what's going on, and I'm just like, okay, that's the world I'm in. I'm here for a reason. Ergo, I'm here to learn a lesson or to be an example to help others and teach others. And so I'm just going about my daily activities, considering myself a life learner, and as some would say, a mentor through example.
Well, I think that's all any of us should be, as examples. No matter what path we take, and this is an interesting thing, is that we all choose different paths. If there were a million people like you out there just causing them grief, that would be, you know, it's sort of like the Gulliver, you know, situation, where although the little people are tying down the big guy. I personally, and this is, and you probably already have got this idea in your head about me, is Debbie and I today we were thinking, wouldn't it be nice to win a big case or win some money, or actually just go out there and try to come up with a big chunk of money and start paying, getting a lot of folks together that actually understand this stuff and start working together to help each other, as opposed to a bunch of people dealing with it one at a time, like you or me or anybody else. I mean, can you imagine all the folks out there working together and willing to throw in money into a pool and say, okay, you know, so-and-so needs this much money to get this thing handled, or this, I mean, it would really help a lot, having a lot of people working together instead of everybody doing this thing by themselves.
I'm glad you mentioned that, because my initial gut inclination was, if I do get a payout, is to give it to the local community that are based literally on the street, or single parents that need the money to get by, not just for myself, but in addition to helping the community, would also be a mentorship program on this.
Well, most people don't know the first thing about what's going on. I mean, even the first thing. So it's kind of scary to me. You know, it's scary that there's so many people out. But here's the problem, though, Cynthia, that, I mean, ultimately, again, we can fight this thing like a flea on the behind of an elephant. It's kind of where we're at. Since everybody's going in there thinking they can, and again, nothing personal, but everybody's going in there thinking they're doing some harm or winning, and I don't see it as winning anymore. I don't feel like anybody's winning, because they just let a few people through every once in a while. Nothing happens. The system doesn't change. It's not really falling apart from the inside. It's falling apart from the outside. It's falling apart economically. It's not falling apart because people are waking up and defeating the court system. That'll never happen. I mean, that's, you know, a couple people pass through here and there, but ultimately, this thing's going to collapse from the outside. It's going to collapse economically first, and then the people are going to wake up, and again, like Debbie and I were looking around thinking, you know what, when this thing goes down, I wish I had access to the documents from the court system. I would release the names and the addresses of the judges.
No, I like that one.
Well, I mean, think about it. Just make sure that that's public knowledge, so everybody that knows who sent them to prison and who took their home and who took their car and who sent, you know, who stole $2,000, $3,000, $4,000, $5,000, $10,000 from their DUI. If everybody
knew. Actually, right now, that is public knowledge. It's just a matter of getting that more widely spread. And all you have to do is go into your local county online court search website and just type in, let's say, a first name and the first letter of a last name. And it'll come up with every single case on anyone that happened within, let's say, you put in a two-year time period. You can view everything if you just bother to do it. And then you can get that information to at least reach out and say, hey, this was a traffic case. You know you can litigate after the fact. Are you interested in at least pursuing a payout to get some compensation for the grief that you were put through?
Well, and again, compensation.
Well, I know it's Federal Reserve notes, but at least it'll help them in their life.
for very sure. You know what? Whatever you get paid out, you better turn it into some medals or some provisions.
Well,
because the Federal Reserve note is going.
And for me, I myself have no interest in gold either, because that value is set by the top level as well. My preference would honestly be something like bartering in shells and sticks rather than something that they determine the value of.
Yeah, but you're a weird lady.
I know.
Gold and silver, when things hit the, when things hit the fan, they will have no control over the determination of that value. And that is determined by the parties transacting the metal. And you see, they can do that because unlike any other transactional item like that, there is no counterparty risk. In other words, you don't have to take. Here's how it works right now. The only reason that when we do trades, we go to the grocery store and we give them Federal Reserve notes for food. The only reason they take those Federal Reserve notes is because somebody in a central bank somewhere says they'll give you something ultimately for that Federal Reserve note. Problem is, there's nothing left to give, and the people haven't figured it out yet. So where the grocer is actually left at this point is he takes the dollar because he's reasonably confident he can find somebody else to take it in exchange for what he needs from them. But hyperinflation, by definition, is when that piece of paper is suddenly looked at with increasing skepticism by the populace, and you go to the grocer and you buy groceries and you hand him a Federal Reserve note, he says, I'm sorry, I can't take that. It's worthless. I can't do anything with it. You will never, ever see that problem with gold and silver. Why? Because its value is embedded in the piece that you hand. The only value that's embedded in that Federal Reserve note is paper and ink. This is what most people don't understand. See, this is why precious metals have survived for 6,000 years, despite the powers that be forever doing their darndest to reduce, to manipulate, and to marginalize the value of those metals. They can't do it. Ben Bernanke and the Federal Reserve today are doing their darndest to marginalize gold and silver today. They are manipulating, they are selling paper, they're doing everything they can think of, and the value still goes up. Why? Because people are figuring out that the manipulators have nothing. And they are attacking the system of value that will leave them in the dust, and they know it. And that, my friends, is why the dollar is collapsing, and that's why your inflation at the gas pumps and at the grocery stores and every place else is going to overwhelm you. And you want to understand why? That's why. It's as simple as that.
Yeah, and before we take a break here, I know what Cynthia was talking about. Ralph, you were talking about the intrinsic value of the metals forever. And I know that it, even if the top guys, the powers that be, anybody trying to manipulate the gold or silver, that they will be overrun by exactly what you were saying, Ralph. That they can't control it. They can try to, but they can't. The fiat garbage, the papers, things like that, you know, that's only propped up by our wishes, by our belief system. And that's about to go away because, they're controlling that completely and it's losing value so quick that even our propping up our belief, our desire for it to be valuable, it can't save that garbage. So that thing's about to go. But anyway, we better get out of here for a break for real quick. Cynthia, hey, as always, we need to talk sometime later on. It's always fun to talk to you, but, give me a buzz later this week or early next week and we'll talk about, you know, what Jack's doing out there.
Gotcha.
All right. We're out of here for a break. Ralph, take us out of here.
Are you prepared for an emergency? Need expert advice? Contact the Survival Center at 1-800-321-2900 or visit their website at survivalcenter.com. With over 35 years of knowledge and experience, the Survival Center is America's premier preparedness center.
In God.
got 30 minutes left of, anyway, we got the ability to call in tonight. Before we accept any more calls, by the way, I want to address a couple things that are going across the chat, because I was looking at it over the break. There's a lot of people talking about whether they should sell their gold or silver or anything like that, and Ralph's probably the best guy to talk to about this, but I just want to make a comment. Somebody said if somebody needed to pay off a debt and they sold their gold for $1,500, that they paid less than $300 for. That's understandable. I agree with, here's the thing, is gold and silver are not going up. The dollar is losing value. So whatever you paid for your gold or silver, whenever you paid for it, it's still just got a value, a buying power value to it. That's it. So if you sell your gold at $1,500 that you paid $200 for, that's because the dollar is that much weaker against it. You can probably still buy, that $1,500 is probably going to buy the same as the $200 could have bought you way back when you bought it at $200. That's pretty much the way it works. Wouldn't you say that, Ralph?
Well, that's a bit of an oversimplification, but, you know, in terms
it
of...
Is.
No, but you make a good point. The point is that, you know, we tend to value gold in dollars. We're actually doing it backwards. We need to value
yep.
the dollar in gold. But we're not there yet. We're not discovering in this country just how deep the slide is going to be. But to answer your other point, yes, indeed, get out of debt. And if you have if you have gold or precious metals as an asset for that, by all means, sell it into the FRNs and pay off your debts, particularly if you have a mortgage. Pay off your mortgage if you can. Pay off whatever debt that you owe so that you are at least free and clear and your net asset value is what your net asset value is after all that stuff is done. And the reason for it is that now you will have no claims made against you when you are probably least able to afford to handle it. Now, there is a mindset that says, well, I'm in debt. If the dollar collapses, I'll be able to pay it off in dollars that are ultimately worthless. So should I wait? Well, the big unknown, and Bob Chapman and I have discussed this on Sovereign Economist a whole lot, is if you do go into a default and a massive devaluation in this country, the question is, will the values of debts be devalued as well? In other words, let's say, for example, we go into a devaluation and we take three of your old dollars and give you one new dollar for it. The question is, will your debt be dropped by a third? We don't know. Nobody knows that now. But my guess is that since most people hold, the bankers hold most of the debt, my bet is that whatever arrangement they make is going to do something to protect them. So, my feeling is you'll sleep better at night if you get out of debt today. And quite frankly, if you have a use for that gold money's equivalent in today's dollars, that provides for your future security, your survivability, your preparedness, by all means, that's a legitimate use. But if you're going to get out of gold and silver because you think their numerical value vis-a-vis the dollar has reached a high, and you have nothing to do but sit on that on the proceeds back into Federal Reserve notes, forget it. We haven't even started to see where we're going yet. And I ask, and I say to people, who think gold is at the top or silver's at the top, I say to them, let me ask you a question. Why is gold and why is silver, why are they pushing record highs for them right now? Most people can't answer that. The bottom line is they're going up because faith in the U.S. currency is going down. In other words, the government has so messed things up that we can't trust the dollar as a store of wealth anymore. So that's why you have gold and silver. Well, let me ask you something. You think gold's at the top? You think silver's at the top? There's only one way it can be at the top. If government
has changed its stripes. And they are legitimately going to handle the deficit. And they are legitimately going to cut out the fraud on Wall Street. And they are legitimately going to protect the dollar and protect your wealth and your well-being. If you believe that, then you should sell your gold and silver. If that's what you really think is going to happen. I don't, obviously. But I'm not you. I can't make your decision for you. As Bob Chapman says, you know, these are the things that you should do. But ultimately, the decision is up to you. Don't listen to me. I don't know what I'm talking about. Do your own research. And decide for yourself. But if you think that the government is going to turn things around and make it all better and fix it all, then you're right. If what you say, if your belief comes true, then you're right. Gold and silver will decline in value, and you should get rid of them now. But you have to understand why they're going up. Because government is going down. You know, there's this little yin and yang there. Your decision, your call. What do you think the future will bring out of Washington and Wall Street? Plan accordingly.
Okay. So what, in essence, in its most simple, you're saying that either invest, take that gold or silver if you have to, sell it, get rid of it and trade it for something that could keep you alive, provisions of sorts, safety, whether it's ammo, guns, water, food, things like that for long range, provisional, or take it, and if you have to, if you have the ability to or enough of it, you can pay off debts, pay down debts to nothing, so that's in the future, you don't have to worry about anybody coming and trying to reclaim something, or hold it, maintain it.
It's an insurance policy, but you know, the thing is that if you have no food, you have no water, and you have no means to defend yourself, you know, when the criminals come to the door and you open the door and you say, you can't touch me, and you hold up a gold coin out there like a shield, they're gonna shoot you and take the gold and you're dead. Okay, so the gold by itself isn't very useful, but to those people who sit there and say, oh, well, you can't eat gold, let me tell you something, Federal Reserve knows. They taste like garbage. They don't taste very good either. The point is, what can you exchange for stuff? And if you have a legitimate reason to exchange the asset of gold for an asset that can help keep you alive, then by all means, do that. You know, first, try and get rid of your Federal Reserve notes in the acquisition of that preparedness material you're talking about. But if all you have is a bunch of debts and some gold and silver put away, you got to evaluate, do I want that debt hanging over my head when the sword of Damocles comes down? It's your call. But if you've got a mortgage hanging out there and you're underwater on this thing and you're in debt, eventually they're going to come take the house. And even if they get to this legislation thing where they can't actually take your house, you still have a civil obligation. It's just become, you know, it goes from a secured debt, i.e. they take your house, to an unsecured debt, i.e. they got to sue you for it, and they can't just come take it out from under you. But the bottom line is it's an obligation. And we see what they're doing with people with obligations these days. You know, witness your little experience in Rockford recently.
Okay, here's a question that you may or may not, I see somebody here said that hard coin currency like dimes and quarters, but it says currently minted. The question is it true coins normally survive devaluation?
Depends on the content. Coins have intrinsic value. If you go back, you know, we have in the precious metals trade what we call bags of junk silver. Junk silver is former U.S. Currency, dimes and quarters and half dollars, pre-1964 or 65 actually, that had 90% silver content. They were worth 25 cents in their day. They still have a face value of 25 cents. In other words, if you take them to the store, they'll be accepted as a quarter, just like the Cupro nickel stuff. But their intrinsic value of silver is now worth about $8. I think with the present drop in silver, it might be $7.80 or something like that. But used to say that in 1964, gas was 25 cents a gallon. You could take one of those quarters and buy a gallon of gas. Well, now you can buy when each one of those is worth $7.80 and gas at $3.60, you can buy 2 gallons. The point is that that silver has held its value. Pre-1982, reliably, pennies containing mostly copper are worth about 3 cents a piece now. All nickels are worth about 7 cents in their intrinsic value, the value of the metal. Quarters, dimes of today's mintage are worth nothing. Don't go to the bank and get quarters and dimes and go look for silver and dimes. That is the most colossal waste of time, you know, you can you can do. They just aren't there anymore. Pennies, I still tend to do that with pennies, and I find about a third of them are pre-1982. You can tell because they're a little heavier than the others. And nickels are about worth 7 cents in today's value today. It's a lot of work. I suppose that eventually, someday, yes, they'll be worth something. You know, they'll be worth the intrinsic value of their metal. And if you look at the history of currency and coinage, and this is why it was embodied in the Constitution, the coinage inferred intrinsic value because the material in the coin itself was worth something regardless of the belief system that surrounded it at the time. That's why they said, mintage of silver, because silver had a value. And the value of that coin transcends and supersedes the value of the government that printed it or minted it. You know, that's what a lot of people, you know, tend to lose track of. In many cases, there are many examples of currencies around the world, a lot of collectors have today, where the coin is worth something remarkable and the government is long since dead. So it will be with, you know, U.S.
I'm waiting for that day, Ralph.
Well, you probably don't have long to wait, but you probably have longer than you think.
Yeah.
You know, if I've learned anything from, listening to Chapman and having him on my show each week for the last couple of years is things never happen as fast as I think they're going to. But if you slow down and you step back a little bit, you can definitely tell that the direction is pretty clear.
Well, I think that Debbie and I were talking about that the other day, and this, the collapse, I mean, if you think about it, it's so big, it's so massive that, I mean, up close, you don't see any movement hardly at all. But out on the fringes, you can see this thing just completely collapsing. And it's going to take a while for it to go, but you know, when it goes, it's gone. I don't see any way for anybody to pick up the pieces on this thing. This is so ugly and so big. Yeah. And it's worldwide. It is worldwide.
See, here's the thing you have to understand. You know, and I get asked this question a lot, and I think it's worth reprising my response here. And the question is, you know, when will the collapse be here? And I say, depending on the individual, the collapse may have happened. Trust me. If you've lost your job and you've lost your home and you're out there living in a Hooverville or a tent or an Obamaville somewhere around the country, for you, the collapse has already hit. If you're a little bit better off and maybe just barely struggling to make ends meet and your home is underwater and you're behind in your car payments, the collapse is imminent. If your hours have just been cut at work and your company's revenue numbers are way down, and you may be facing being laid off sometime soon, the collapse is imminent for you. If you are much better off financially and economically, depending on how your, you know, on how your assets are deployed, you may not see the collapse at all, or you may see some part of it. See, the thing is, it's different for many, many different people. We have 22.5% unemployment in this in this country right now, if you take the real numbers per John Williams at Shadow Stats. The reality is, though, if you're employed in a fairly affluent neighborhood and you're in a, you know, in a white-collar community, maybe it doesn't look quite so bad for you. In which case, I say, okay, go to the inner city of Detroit or, you know, New Orleans or some of these other places where things are falling apart. On a scale, it is huge. It is massive. It's like the Titanic. It has a huge inertia. It doesn't happen overnight, but it does happen inexorably. You're seeing it on a, you know, on a grand scale around the globe as, you know, as countries implode. It started with Dubai in the summer of 2009, moved to Greece, then to Ireland. Iceland had it very early on. The entire system is imploding. And for those people, they have bars on the windows of their homes. It's the only way they can keep their belongings safe. Argentina had two collapses in the 1990s and in the year 2000. And a guy named Forfall, who does forfall.blogspot.com, go look at some of the videos he has of driving through Argentina. You see the bars on the door, and you see the poverty going on around. The reality is, for those people, the collapse hit very, very fast. You know, 3 weeks before the final event, the watershed in Argentina, no one had any idea what was happening. And they went from the illusion of prosperity to an ultimate financial collapse in the span of about a week and a half. That's how quickly it happens. Nobody realizes that in this country. We can't even imagine here in this just-in-time economy. But it really is that rapid. And if you've already lost your job, been thrown out of your home, and are living in the back of your car or wherever, my goodness, in South Florida, they have 20% vacancy of homes. 1 in 5 homes in southern Florida, empty. Where did all those people go?
Where did they go?
Many of them, many of them moved in with others. A lot of kids moving in with relatives, elders moving in with their kids. A lot of family consolidation there. The rental market hasn't really increased that much, and quite frankly, there are a number of homeless out there. But in Florida, quite frankly, a lot of what happened there was they moved away. You know, but you have to realize in the real estate market, the overbuilding that happened in the boom times from 2003 to 2005, early 2006, made a whole lot of extra homes. And they were selling, with about a four-month backlog. Now that backlog conservatively is at 3.5 years, and that's before you throw the foreclosure confusion on there. Try and buy a home today from somebody who was underwater on their mortgage. Your title insurance company is going to laugh at you. You know, I can't write title insurance on that. The bank's got the title somewhere in MERS. And, of course, what the banks are doing is the banks are simply saying, oh, well, we'll go to the attorneys general and get laws passed. Here in Arizona, we even had a law saying that mortgages had to be documented by the banks before they could proceed with foreclosures. And one committee woman made the bill disappear. It literally disappeared from the docket and got renamed as fire districts.
Really?
Yeah. Ruth McLean, Arizona Legislature.
Let me ask
you. SB 1259.
Here's a question. If people and really think about all the homes that are empty and things like that, if we were in a system where you still had to put 20% down, and we had, I mean, I know this is a big step, but or a big leap. If you actually had to put 20% down and you had to qualify, I mean, really qualify beyond the 20%, how many homes, A, would have been built, and how many people would have been buying homes that really shouldn't have been buying homes? I guess the question is, if we really were in a system that ultimately did not allow...
Enforced accountability, I think is what you're trying to say.
What did you just say?
I just said if the system enforced the accountability.
There you go. I think, and this is, it gets pretty obvious, but the bankers made it possible for a lot of people to pretend that they could own something that they really never were supposed to own. They got people into mortgages, or at least put their name on them so they could create new money with signatures. And what they really were doing was taking over property, taking over land through other people's means. They were making it so they would use those signatures to secure for the banks, for themselves, the property in the future.
Well, what the banks did was the banks would take that mortgage. They really didn't care about the quality of the, you know, of the buyer and whether they could pay or not. They would take that money and they would securitize it up and they'd bundle it up and they'd sell off the risk. So the bank ultimately was able to show the amount of the mortgage as an asset, which they then sold and got paid cash for. And that's basically what has led to this financial morass that we're in. And this is why we have $1.25 quadrillion of debt around the world. That is the debt star that's going to suck everything up into the anti-gravity, the anti-dollar hole, if you will. And it's going to take little flailing Ben Bernanke through its little, you know, counterclockwise spiral down the drain, and he's going to disappear in a little flash of light. And we're going to be left with, you know, we're going to be left with nothing. But this is exactly how the banks did what they did. They basically, you know, printed up the fiat currency for the money to pay off the seller of a home so that now you, the buyer, have obligated yourself to the bank. The bank has nothing in it whatsoever. It's nothing more than an accounting entry. They don't care whether you can pay the thing back or not. This is why, you know, this is why there was this, you know, this push to make America, you know, to, I mean, homes were the American dream, and it was an attempt to get everybody, you know, everybody should own a home. It was like a right. So they forced the bankers to essentially lower their lending standards. So the bank said, okay, we'll lower our lending standards, but you know what? We know that there are going to be losses there. So how do we get around the potential for those losses? Oh, I know. We'll bundle up those securities and we'll sell them off to unsuspecting municipalities, pension funds, state and county and local governments all around the, you know, all around the world. Nice job. See, the bankers are covered. They shifted the losses over to your pension fund. Your pension fund owns a, you know, owns a mortgage-backed security. Your pension's at risk. Hello. Ultimately, it came back right to roost in the only place that it can. The taxpayer. You and me. Because we're the only ones with any assets. So wherever they transferred, you know, wherever they transferred the risk, there was only one place where it would end up. On you and me.
That is correct. Hey, this is an interesting thought, too, is that when you said the word quadrillion, it's funny because the fiat debt-based currency that they run those numbers against, they don't really have anything in common with gold or silver, do they?
The fiat numbers? No, they kind of run.
Yeah, I mean, the debt and all that artificial, the nature of those transactions, the debt-based transactions and this giant public debt, supposedly, it really doesn't affect, and it doesn't affect on a worldwide or global scale, gold or silver. I mean, you could go somewhere else and still have a value that you can purchase.
That's
water,
yeah,
houses,
absolutely.
Gold or silver.
Absolutely. Yeah. It's the universal currency, if you will. You don't need to go to, you know, you don't need to go to the currency exchange in a foreign land if you're carrying that. You may have to go to a currency trader that'll give you something in the local currency, but that's a formality and doesn't affect the system, you know, or the process so much. But here's the thing that, you know, here's the thing that's interesting. People look at that value of $1,500 for an ounce of silver and they go, wow, that's a whole lot. Are you kidding? Since 1988, the U.S. government and the Federal Reserve have been manipulating the price of that precious metal down like you wouldn't believe. Why? Because when gold goes up, it's the dead canary in the bottom of the coal mine that tells the world fiat currencies are garbage. They are meaningless. Government doesn't want you to know that. They want you to keep believing in those Federal Reserve notes in your wallet. Because if you found out what the truth was, you wouldn't accept them from anybody, and you'd be ashamed to offer them to anybody in exchange. But that's not where we are. And if the governments hadn't manipulated the prices of gold for, you know, since 1988, so 98, 2000, 23 years, just to keep up with the honest-to-goodness inflation from when gold hit its high in 1980, gold would be over $7,000 today. Over $7,000. The reason it's $1,500 is because your government has been in there selling gold that they do not have in order to keep that price down so that you, the people, will not find out just how worthless their paper currencies are. And you all, for the most part, eat it up every time you transact one of these Federal Reserve notes and give it to somebody in exchange for something else. You don't know any better. Or, if you do, you feel like you can't do anything about it. This is why we're in the mess that we're in. It's no more complicated than that. And, guys, we got to get out. Any last words, Kurt?
No, I appreciate everybody coming on early tonight. For those of you that came on late, you can still catch the first half or even the whole show if you'd like to. Again, starting just in a couple of minutes. So, Ralph, thank you very much for letting me do this early. I know that we may be changing a few things in the future. But until then, we'll see everybody next Tuesday at the normal time. And, Cynthia, thanks for coming on. And, Ralph, take us out of here.
Thanks very much. And as Kurt said, we will begin the rebroadcast here within probably within about 3 or 4 minutes. Thanks for listening. You've been listening to I Am the People with Kurt Kallenbach here Tuesday, April 26, 2011. Good night, all.